Welcome to Chiropractic Leaders Audio Experience, teaching students to be successes of tomorrow, helping doctors get to the next level. Here's your host, Dr. Joseph Clarino.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of chiropracticleaders.com. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Clarino. Pleasure, welcome here. They're all laughing at me because I almost forgot the name again. Everybody say hello.
Hi, hey.
Hello, everybody.
All right, so let's just jump right in today and we'll go over what we did on week one. So I have this training laid out for the peaks, trying to just hit different points. And then, well, basically what I do is I sign off and say, okay, look, they're ready to do X, Y, or Z based on the week, based on what we've trained on. And so week one was based on the office flow, the office tour, the pre-therapies, post-therapies, taking x-rays, analyzing x-rays, and the super bill. So you think that sounds relatively easy, but we probably spent a good hour and a half on a couple of those topics where they've gotten trained on, more time on those other things, and I could probably spend another hour, 2 hours on it even more. So there's just a lot of data coming at them at one shot. But guys, just so really I think the eye-opener today was the super bill. I mean, that was probably the biggest thing. But any other big eye-openers that kind of came about that kind of we can touch about and say, this is a great tidbit for all practicing that someone else may not think about, but we're going over here and saying, well, I had no idea. I had no clue. And let's just talk about those kind of ideas today, because I think let's talk about our training and then how does that apply to someone else doing their work in their office.
One of the best things I think that you guys do from the get-go is the office tour for the brand new patient that comes in. Day one, the first thing they get is a tour of the entire office, and it just gives the opportunity for you to start planting seeds of, oh, wow, okay, they do a lot more here than just, crack my neck and then I'm on my way. You guys have a kids room here, which I think is really awesome. So it's like when you're giving the new office tour, you just talk about the kids room and say, we see a lot of kids here. Dr. Deb has her diploma in pediatrics, and it just like gets the ball rolling and gets people thinking about, okay, maybe I can bring my family here. Oh, I didn't know that chiropractic care was good for kids, so maybe I should bring my kids in. So it's like literally from the first 5 minutes they step into the office, you're already telling them this is a place for families.
So let's talk about that for half a second. I think there's a couple major points inside that someone never does, right? And it's funny, I've worked with some of the biggest design companies in chiropractic, and they still get it wrong. So this is a huge nugget right here. So where do most offices put their kids' rooms?
Front.
The front. Good or bad?
Bad.
Why, Dr. Oz, why were you like, I don't know? What were you thinking?
I just picture a BC practice with a lot of kids in the front area, and I don't think I like it.
Right, so today's world, safe or unsafe? In the eyes of the world.
Unsafe.
Unsafe. So you're going to leave your kid by the front door? Unattended while you're in the back office mm-hmm. getting adjusted. Two, when you go to get the kid to adjust them and the adjusting rooms are in the back, what do you got to do to get the kid at the playroom?
Run up to the front. Come on. Yep. Wait for him to come up, get on the table.
What did that do to your flow?
Slow it up.
Right. What's one of the number one reasons why people will leave your practice?
Wait time.
Flow. So you just created a problem for yourself just because of the location of your kid's room. Every office in Align Life, I move their kid's room to directly near the primary doctor who's seeing the kids. So like in my office, my wife is the primary. We have a window into the kids' room. The reason we do that is because mom does this. Like she can peek around the table and see her kids screaming in the window, but she knows her kid's okay. Right? Because the reality of this is that you don't want to know your kid, and we're 10 steps away from grabbing the kid to get them adjusted. So our flow's time is real fast. We also make sure the kids are in the room before they get adjusted. But if we had to grab the kid, we can go get the kid in the kids' rooms fast. So those are two major nuggets right there that I think every office that wants to see kids, they always put the kids' room in the front, and then they don't think about the flow or they don't think about the safety side of things, what the parents thinking. You know it's safe. My staff's watching it, but you don't know. Some creep can walk by, sneak in the front door, open the door, pull the kid out and go, and it's gone, right? And that sounds really scary and conspiracy theorist, but that's just, you have to think that way today, you know what I mean? Great. What else did we talk about? Those are great points right there.
Yeah. For me, one of the things that I really like is how you guys divide everything, like day one, day two, day three. And it's less overwhelming for the patient because sometimes, if we give everything at the first visit, sometimes it can be a bit overwhelming as a patient.
Right.
So I just like how you guys divide it.
Good. So, I mean, we, as you guys know, we do a day one, day two, day three, basically break in. Dr. Matthew, you want to elaborate on a little bit how we do it? Just kind of give them the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, so they come in day one, so we'll do their history, their exam, and their x-ray. And then we don't adjust day one. Very rarely do we do it. Certain cases we will, but we tell them, look, between now and your next visit, the doctors, our team, we're going to analyze your films, we're going to go over your case. That way, when you come back, we have a plan ready for you. Send them home. They get an email sent to them explaining after everything we just said. You know, when you come back, we're going to do a group ROF. We're going to go over your individual findings. We'll give you a plan. If you get adjusted, it's discharge. So we tell them we pre-frame before they even come in. They come back for day two. We do the report of findings. We give them more recommendations. Like a lot of times we'll give a pillow or a traction device, and we say, look, we'll give this to you on your next visit when you come to your better results faster. We just keep moving stuff to the next visit because they're getting a lot of information. And if you give it to them all at once, they're going to be freaked out. That's just too much. They're not going to remember most of it, first off. And then they're going to be freaked out. Like, I just came with a little back pain, and now I've got 100 things on me.
Right.
So we just kind of push them through it, introduce.
But you also said something else I thought was great. You kind of, you said it, but I don't think you realized you said it, is we give them a carrot, right? So from day one to day two, what's the carrot? What do they want?
The adjustment.
They want the adjustment. But they also want to know, the hell's going on with me? Right, so if you did your education process right, they want to know the nuts and bolts of what's going inside their spine. Plus, they want the goods, right? They want the goods. And then report a finding day. What do they want? What do they want after report a finding?
Adjustment.
Yeah. They want to know their x-rays. They want to see what's going on. Like, how bad am I? What's going on with me? Am I screwed up? Right? Because now they want to know. Okay, whoa, this is really. Then you give them a care plan, and then we give them a pillow or something in the care plan. But they don't get that until they get the better results faster. See what I'm saying? So it's almost like we're almost creating this next thing, curiosity. If you start looking at advertising, if you start looking at anything in the world of process to attract, it's always setting up curiosity. Always. It's always about curiosity. It's funny. When you look at it through that lens, I think I mentioned this a while ago. I don't know if it was here or not, but like you ever like buy a white car and all of a sudden you notice that like there's 50,000 white cars on the road? Or you're buying a white Nissan and then you see the same car over and over again? Well, the same thing happens is once you start looking at things through this type of lens, you start to realize that really everything coming at you is based on this curiosity of what's going on. I mean, I'll give you a simple example is like, you ever been out to like a club or something and they're like, oh no, the wait line is, it's an hour to get in and it's a VIP line over here. And then you get in and there's no one in there because they created this angst of curiosity of what's going on. And that's just a quick example came to my head, but there's a million of those examples. It happens on TV every day. It's just crazy.
There's a, like Facebook and Instagram, why those are so popular and why like people get addicted to it is because every time you pop up, you don't know what's going to be on there.
Right.
You're curious, like, oh, what are these people doing? And it's something new every time you get on there.
That's like if you watch a football game and you know the score.
You're not going to watch it.
You're not going to watch it. It's just like, you're like, I know the ending. Why would I watch it?
Yeah.
So there's a name for that. I forget the name of it, but it's just it's funny how it's created. So great. And that's important. But you have to understand that there is a true technique from day one, day two, day three, and on all the way through that you have to do that. We also talked about earlier, since we're on that subject, we were talking about how when you're in the world of chiropractic, your foot is on the gas pedal. Like you're pushing hard all the time. Like you have to hustle to be good in this profession. But the thing is, what I thought was that after 10, 15 years, I could put it on cruise control and hang out and maybe have, you know, kind of chill. And what I realized is that, you know, even doing at the level we do it at, you still have to continue to hustle. You got to move. You got to put your foot down and always go after it. And if you look at the great ones out there, you look on Facebook, they're all doing screenings still. They're doing talks. And they've been in practice 20, 25, 30 years, whatever it is, and they're still out there hustling. It's because you constantly have to put yourself in front of the public in this profession. Otherwise, the squeaky wheel doesn't get the oil. It's just that simple. You got to squeak. If you don't squeak, no one knows you're there. And that's just how it goes. Any comments on that from that side of it? I know you guys, when I was talking about that earlier, it was like a deer in headlights. You were like, oh, I got to work for 30 years? Actually got to work? Yeah, I'm like, yeah, you actually got to work. You know?
I think some people just expect like, you know, that first 5 years is going to be tough, but then I'm going to make it. And then when it's made, I just won't have to work that hard.
Yeah,
but then you slack off for a month, and you realize your visits start going down. Like, oops.
Well, we were talking about what the typical roller coaster of a chiropractic lifestyle is. It's that they find something that works marketing-wise. They do it. They get 20, 30 new ones in, and then all of a sudden they stop doing it because they get so busy. And then they takes 2 months later, then they're back to where they were because their retention sucks, right? Conversion sucks, retention sucks, then they're back to where they were. So then they go back and do the marketing again, and they get busy again, and they're like, oh, this is great. And then they guess what happens? Their retention and conversion sucks, and they start all over again. And that's the typical lifespan of a roller coaster of a chiropractor. Instead of saying, okay, what works? How do I multiply and maximize what I'm getting in? How do I retain and convert? And, okay, now I'm getting bigger and bigger. Well, then maybe I need an associate or another doctor on team. What do I need to do here to make this better so I can continue to grow? So many doctors get caught up in that cycle, and it destroys their practice. It destroys them. What else?
I was going to say, I think a misconception among students is that when we graduate, we're just going to know all the things we need to know to open an office and run a successful business, and it's just not true at all.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to take insurance in your office, you still have to know about insurance because people are going to ask you questions, and we just spent 90 minutes talking about, I think, the basic insurance outline and how it works. There's just so much that goes into having a successful practice.
What were your takeaways from that?
And I want to just touch bases on, I mean, like, this is the beginning of week three, and, like, every week I look forward to being here because I'm learning something new every single day. And for, like, chiropractic students out there, it's something that we don't talk about, something that the patients don't see, people don't see. I feel like we take it for granted, but calling that patient and getting that patient on the schedule, on the books, what do you do next? Like, getting the folders out, you know what I'm saying? Where's the folders? Like, those are small things, but
they're big.
They're big, though, right?
So he's talking about, so we talk about day one, day two, day three, and that's great. So I have a, if you had a graph here, you'd see it, but I have an imaginary line, and above the line is about doctors, below the line is about the CAs or your staff, right? So below the line on day one, there's a whole cascade that has to happen between day zero, the phone call, and day one. Getting files ready, verifying insurance, putting the digital file together, putting the hard copy file together, if you have both or if you're one or the other. Where does that live? How do we know it's done? Is there a checklist involved? There's all these systems behind it that are sure that when a patient walks in the door, that patient's like, it's like ready to go, right? And then from day one to day two of the report, there's another process that has to happen between a doctor and the team. And that all has to get married together about, okay, what's the report look like? Are the x-rays analyzed? Is it in the system? Is the files ready? Is the care plan ready? Is everything ready to go? Where does it live? Who's looking at that? Who's making sure it's all getting done? And if none of that's happening, you're not checking off the list. All of a sudden, the patient walks in the door, and you got to three-ring circus, man. Been there, done that. Been there. We're like literally the patient's in the room, and I'm running, and I'm stealing a freaking care plan because I'm not ready for the patient. You know? I'm like, how many visits is it? Like, I'll just take it. I'm like, you have a really good spine. You're like, yes, that was phase three. I'm like, yeah, but for you, we're going to recommend 18 visits today because we think this is probably the best. You know, I'm just kidding. But you get what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it was a cluster. And so getting it down is so important, and it's hard to describe it on the mic, but the whiteboard really clears it up. And just how to get those verticals under each major day from a CA standpoint to a doctor standpoint, where do those procedures and processes and responsibilities lie so that everybody ends up at the same endpoint? So every day, it's like day one, boom, we got it. Day two, boom, we got it. Day three, boom. Daily visits, we got it. Daily visits, we got it. And that's where that comes in. And then the micro stuff is like the huddles in the morning. It gives you clarity about what's happening in the day. Where is it coming from? So these are all little things like that I think are great. But let's just touch on the insurance thing. So we went over our super bill. So like every time a patient comes in, we have a super bill. Whether it's insurance or cash, doesn't make a difference. The same super bill. And we just mark off what we've done, what we haven't done. And then we talked about how insurance lives through that if you're taking insurance. We're 97% cash, so it's really not that big of a deal for us. But with that said, we still live a little bit in the insurance world. And how does that all fit down? What were some takeaways from that? Because there's a lot of data I threw at you.
Big one for me was talking about the tiers in the network when you're in network. So basically tier one is you get less paperwork you have to fill out and you make more money off of it, but you have to follow their guidelines, their rules, which their guidelines for tier one, let's say it's you can't take x-rays and the patient only gets 4.1 visits.
So we're talking about ASHN. For those of you out there who have heard of it, it's called American Specialty Health Network. It was designed by chiropractors. Of course, like I said, chiropractors are great at eating their young. So they came up with a concept of saying, okay, how do we create a subsidiary for the big insurance companies, Cigna, Aetna, Blue Cross, Blue Shield. So they came up with their own guidelines, their own studies, their own everything, and they've created this outline for you to be in network. Well, the thing is that once you're in network with them, you're in bed. Once you're in bed, it's their rules or the highway. Well, their rules suck, and it's really crazy how bad it is, because the patient will see on their card they have 20 visits, but when they come in, their guidelines, their research says what? 4.1, right? Mm-hmm. So the patient thinks you're lying and you're trying to hustle them, and you're just bull. So it turns into this whole cluster without getting into it, but we got out of it years ago. It's just too much. Some states have sued them, like Ohio has sued them and won. I know there's a few other states that have sued them and won. Their associations are strong. Unfortunately, Georgia's associations aren't. They're just not strong enough to beat them. So, but yeah, what else on the insurance stuff? I think it was some really...
Well, how important is the location? Where you want to practice? Where you want to set your practice if you're going to take insurance?
Yeah, it's huge important. I love that.
I wasn't taking that in perspective, but it's a big takeoff of the talk that we have today. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, insurance is there. If you're going to practice insurance and you're going to keep, you know, and that's going to happen. Some areas are better than other areas, simply put. Some areas are better for personal injury than other areas, simply put. So you got to decide what's the best fit for you. Some places are better for families than others. Some people are better for, you know, corrective kind of work or like glamour work, you know what I mean, where you can kind of come like a high-end clinic. It just depends what you want to do, but you bet you know your area. We came up here on a motion. We came up in Sugar Hill with just a God-sent prayer, and we just came up here with you know, piss and vinegar, and came up here and we said, we're going to open our practice up. I didn't know a damn thing about anything. We did our demographics. The only thing we knew is that there was a Home Depot and Lowe's on one side of town. There was a Home Depot and Lowe's on the other side of town. And I was right between them. And I said, well, if they're going to open up there, and they're 7 miles this way and 7 miles that way, I got to be in a good spot in between, because if you look at like a light, you know, when a light shines down, it leaves a cone of light. So say a cone is 7 feet. Well, the next light, you should have it spaced out where it's just crossing over the 7 feet of cone so that you have a total of 14 feet of coverage. Well, my theory was, if they're there and I'm here, they're there, I'm in the middle of the cone, I'm good, right? I'm covered. But it does, you know, our area just doesn't have great insurance. It just never has. And that's just because of the type of jobs these people have in this area and the type of income. But, you know, we still rock it out. It's just a matter of different areas for different incomes. So really pay attention to that. And we could do a whole other talk about that too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Something that I also really took away from the whole insurance conversation is that I think it's really easy for students and recent graduates to say, well, I'm just not going to take insurance. It's easier to just only accept cash. But when a new prospective patient calls you and asks you if you take insurance and you say no, a lot of them, I think, are just going to hang up the phone, or, you know, you guys say they're just not interested. If you say no, we accept no insurance, then they're just going to go somewhere that does accept it. So there's definitely a balance. I think it's awesome that you guys are mostly cash, but you do take some insurance so you don't just lose those people right away.
And I got to tell you, we had a franchise that wanted to go all cash. So we're putting them through like a process. And they have to pass out, just like you guys have to pass through your stuff. Their team and the doctor has to pass our quiz. Otherwise, they can't go cash. We won't let them go cash, because they're going to tank their office. Because if the team can't answer the question when the phone call is, where are you going to lose 85, 90% of that?
The phone call.
The phone call. You just said it. So if their team can't answer the call and handle the situation and convert that patient in, guess what happens? So you're paying all this money for ads. You go out there doing talks. You're doing all this stuff. Guess what happens? You're losing it because you're not getting the residual value back because your team's not trained properly. That's the first thing. Second thing is the doctor's not trained properly, right? The doctor doesn't have the mindset for that, to hold the cash down. When push comes to shove, can their certainty and value be there? This morning, I had my young patient come in, and she told the story about, she's a personal trainer, and how she's been beating the dad up about bringing her daughter in to come get adjusted. So she finally said, look, you're not allowed to go home until your dad comes in and he talks to me. And made him come in and sat him down and said, look, your daughter needs chiropractic. And she's like, I have no dog in a fight. I'm just a fan. And I like your daughter and I like chiropractic, and they both need to be together. But the reality is, if you don't come in and do that, then, you know, it's just not going to work for her. And that certainty was so big. I mean, here's a young girl who's a trainer but has certainty involved with that, what she's doing as a trainer, and she's doing it as from a chiropractic perspective. The doctor has to have the same thing, and if a doctor can't pass that, they're never, ever going to be a cash practice. You got to own that, man. It's so important. So important. All right, last takeaway. We'll wrap this thing up. So So we went over to see what we billed today. Anything with insurance? Give me some stuff on the insurance, just because I know it was such a big thing. How about the...
The diagnosis pointing was...
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about that for a second. So diagnosis pointing and RU.
Yeah, so they're going to look at... The insurance company's going to look at your top four diagnoses. Like, you can have a bunch of them, but they're only going to look at the top four. And you got to make sure everything, all the codes that you're billing out, as far as adjustments, therapies, whatever, they have to point to those top four. So if they don't, they don't meet all criteria, then you're not going to get paid on it.
Yeah, so if you have, like, a lumbar, you know, lumbar... lumbalgia, like back pain diagnosis, and you're charging three to four regions, and you have a extremity, and you have a muscle stem, and you have therapeutic exercises. How many of those codes that you billed for actually fit that lumbar diagnosis? Did you have a sciatica? Did you have, and how do they integrate together? So they want to look at it and say, is this actually getting to the point of what you billed me for? And if they don't match it, they don't fit it, then you're out. So it's a really big deal to get that done. So, guys, we got to wrap this thing up. We got patients to see in a few minutes. Awesome podcast today. Again, just tons of data, man. Appreciate you guys being here. Over and out. See you next week.
Adios. See you later, guys.